And then to sum up my own personal life, in the late summer of 1944, I was asked to go overseas and join the British branch radiation lab and take charge of the airborne work there. And I went over in October of 1944 and stayed till the end of the war. Most of our work then was with the 8th Air Force, although I did some work with the 9th Troop Carrier Command. The as I said earlier, at one point some of our people moved into Paris in what was called the Advanced Service Base. They tended to work more with the tactical fighter groups mm-hmm. that were based down the continent. And when the sort of several major projects that we undertook, but I might back off a minute and say the British Branch Radiation Lab, forget when it started, but had to have been in 43, I think, probably, maybe before that. But there, we were closely coupled to the military. We had a small laboratory in Britain. The 8th Air Force dedicated one of its bomber groups to training, introduction of new techniques, adapting the equipment in various ways. So one adaptation was to get a rather precise bombing system that could be used with the radars. Mm-hmm. And that was developed back here in the States and then at Alconbury, where this was done, installed, trained people there, went operational from there. And the one operation I was going to say was very successful as far as I was concerned. The 8th Air Force fighters had moved to the continent to shorten their mm-hmm. distance to where they had to operate. And it's hard for some of us to realize it, but they had difficulties rendezvousing with a bomber formation. And although the bombers would take off and you knew where the target was and the fighters would take off later, they didn't see each other. Mm-hmm. It's a big sky, and even those formations don't show up all the time. And that was recognized as a very tough problem of how do you get people together. Well, again, back in the lab in the States, we had something called the Beacon Group. They developed systems whereby you could use beacons which could be interrogated by a radar. And by that time in Europe, our ground people had installed one of the radiation lab built MEWs, microwave early warning sets. And the microwave early warning set on the continent could see the bombers, they were high, and good targets. The fighters were harder for them to see. And so if we would install in a fighter a responder beacon, common practice in all mm-hmm. aircraft today, mm-hmm. the microwave early warning, the MEW, could interrogate, get a signal back, and therefore track the fighters. And so the lab gambled. They built 24 sets that could go into a fighter, P-47, P-51. And they told me when they had them ready. And I talked to the fellows operational in the field, and they thought it was just a great idea. Mm-hmm. Being a civilian, we didn't run this up through the normal channels of everybody having to sign and finally mm-hmm. get it up to the commanding general. The fellows down in the field were always reluctant to sign their names to some newfangled idea because they didn't want to have it canceled or get known and have it show up that they had lousy ideas. But I, as a civilian, go up to headquarters, talk to the technical guys there. They liked it. Would I talk to the general? Call a conference. I describe it. General says, that's a great idea. But it's not for this war. There's no way I can get requisitions and requirements back and have it anything short of a year. I said, give me 24 power supplies, putt-putts, sergeants who know something about the aircraft and installation. I'll supply the rest of it. We'll have it installed in 30 days. Done. Now, the military had allowed us 10,000 pounds of air freight across the Atlantic every month. No questions asked.